All right, welcome to the next episode of The Slight Edge Advantage, the thing that makes you different. What is your differential? What makes you stand out? What is your drive? We all have motivation. When that motivation turns into drive, that really gives us our slight edge advantage. And today I've got a very special guest. He's a friend of mine, a speaking mentor. Mr. Bob Frere has come in here in studio to speak with us about what he's done. Now, I've worked with Bob here for about 2 years now since we've met, and he's worked with countless executives throughout the who's who of Fortune 500 companies. He's been a professional speaker for over 30 years. And what he's seen from the side of the stage, looking at professional executives trying to give presentations, has really awoken something in Bob over the years. And he's even now written a book about how to have professional presentation skills that's going to set you apart, give you a slight edge advantage. So welcome, Mr. Bob Frere.
Good morning, Jeremy.
Thanks for coming in here.
My pleasure.
And first of all, kind of how did it start for you? How did you get the speaking bug? Because mine started much later in life. But I have it pretty big. So yeah. How's your story?
Long story short, to get hired by the Dale Carnegie and Associates when I was 22 years old and worked for them throughout my 20s.
That's pretty young, right? What was it? You were probably one of the youngest one in that.
I didn't have clothes. I had to go buy clothes. I had nothing to wear. Right. And it was just a very fortuitous. And
is that in New York?
In New York, yeah. And I would tell people my brain was like a whiteboard with nothing on it.
And probably better.
I learned from the very best and was fortunate enough to do that. At the age of 29, I went out into my own business as a professional speaker and has been doing that for the last couple of years ever since.
Yeah. So when you started taking that skill from the Dale Carnegie, is that more sales training?
It was everything. It was sales training, but the key that got me was the public speaking skills.
Right,
and
right.
I started in sales training, but became very interested in watching people speak in their work.
Yeah.
And I would often be hired as a speaker. I always asked to go early and sit in on their meetings
and
watch their executives work. You know, who's coming on before me, who is coming on after me. And I saw hundreds of executives struggle in some ways. Some do great. But
struggle with their message or struggle with being consuming what they're saying?
Well, the difficulty of presenting well, how to have the confidence to stand and be articulate and grab the audience and keep the audience.
Yes.
And I saw people have some great struggles with it, as you would see that every day if you look closely.
Yeah. So in your kind of assessment of these executives telling these, doing the presentations, what do you think the differentiator is between a good presenter and a bad presenter on the executive scene?
Well, first, not to panic.
Yeah.
Number one, right? Speaking by its nature, I've had hundreds of conversations about this. Speaking by its nature, as you know, Jeremy, is an adrenaline-producing activity mixed with performance anxiety.
Yeah, especially depending on the audience.
Well, it depends that and the topic and all kinds of things that come into this. And so when the average person, you and I being average, the average person is asked to speak, it produces anxiety and adrenaline, even thinking about it. Mm-hmm. So the first thing a person has to do is get that under control, or what I like to say is to use it to their advantage, because it's not going away.
Right.
Right? And how do they use that extra energy? I say extra coffee won't do it. Caffeine won't help.
You actually tell people not to.
That's right. Alcohol does not a good idea.
Yeah.
And I know you're a fan of Red Bull, and that could get in the way.
Yes.
And make it worse.
Yeah.
So the first thing is not to panic. And I think the second, very close next to it, which would affect the idea of someone's fear about that, would be to prepare correctly.
Right. Yeah. Knowing your topic, knowing that I think the stakes of what the outcome of your presentation is. So you have so many different kind of stages. It might be a stage in an auditorium talking to a room full of people, or it might be your stage is in front of a board room at the end of the table.
Right.
You know, that's your stage right there.
It could be anything.
Yes. And it maybe you're not the home court advantage either. You're visiting somebody else's company, doing a pitch to get their job.
That's correct.
And that's a stage.
There's a whole lot of panic going on in there if given the opportunity, right?
I've always got butterflies, but they're in formation.
Yeah.
And that's where that
preparedness comes from. If you can get it organized and if you know you're prepared.
Yeah.
Right? And I've talked to lots of people about this, about how to prepare. I've written a chapter in the book about it. And if you can prepare correctly, it can help control the butterflies and control that anxiety.
So I'm going to give you a lightning bolt on that one.
Thank you, I think.
Because preparedness is the key then.
Absolutely.
Because once you get up there, many times you get the deer in the headlights sometimes, right? They introduce you, you walk up, and from the side of the stage where you're doing your run through your first line to the time you get that hit your mark, you're like, shit.
Yeah.
What was I supposed to say here?
Right. Preparation.
And that preparation is just, that's when it kicks in, because then you just start talking and then it comes back.
Yeah, it usually does for people. The other thing that's in play here for speakers or anybody given a presentation is the timeline. You're always under the timeline.
Right.
Nobody's ever said to me, Bob, come on over and speak for as long as you want, right? It's always, I mean, we did this last week. You called me and you said, we had a great conversation. You said you had a speech to give.
I did.
And I said, when is it? And you said Saturday.
It was Thursday when I called you.
And I said, how long is the speech? And what did you say?
60 seconds.
60 seconds. And what did we do? We prepared a 60-second.
Right. We did.
And I know it worked because I'm here now.
It did work. It worked pretty well.
Right.
I got some bad advice, I think, from one of the people going in there to make it more about one thing, and then a lot of other people were there who didn't get that advice, and they made it about another thing. So I kind of felt like my presentation was a little off the mark, and so I didn't do as well as I think I should have. Uh-huh. But I'm pretty hard on myself.
But the 60 seconds, we had 60 seconds.
We had 60, we had 60 tight,
seconds.
Tight
and
too.
We prepared a 60 second.
And I came in at 58 seconds.
Great.
And I had to do it three times, three different, in 58, 58, 58. One of the cardinal rules and speaking is don't
be late.
Go late. Don't so go over.
That's very unusual, that time frame.
It is unusual, right?
More commonly, I've seen executives have to open up a session 10 minutes, right? It's a slot, and they've got to hit their mark.
Right.
Again, preparation makes all the difference in the world.
It does. And that's where it comes down to then, not only the presentation itself, the word you're saying, but how you say it with your body language, and then presenting the slides. And that's probably where most people come in wrong.
Well, we live in a world of PowerPoint, right, which is everywhere. And to this day, still, PowerPoint was invented in the late 80s, and we still see people
struggling,
misusing PowerPoint. Yeah. And so when PowerPoint is used correctly, it's fantastic.
Yeah,
when it's used poorly, it diminishes from... I can give you 100 examples. I'm not going to, but just you see people, you know, what we call it, death by PowerPoint. It's a thing. So that has to be all that is a visual supplement of what you're trying to say. Often it's a distraction.
Sure.
And so we've got to get that.
That's a good point because it is a distraction. Your mind works so much faster than the person speaking that you have too much information on there. They get ahead of you real fast.
I saw a speaker the other day that put up a slide that you couldn't decipher if you had 20 minutes. And then the speaker put the slide up and talked about something else.
Making it worse.
You know where my mind went? My laundry.
Right.
I went thinking about the laundry. You just...
Zone out. Yeah.
It's
you lost them.
Self-inflicted distractions.
So your book, what's the name of it?
The book is Speaking and Presentation Skills for People in the Workplace.
Okay.
Pro tips, Jeremy. Pro tips for people who present at work.
And that could be any field then. So it's a very open book that many people could use it. And I imagine once you become a pretty good presenter in the workplace, you probably become a pretty good presenter in life. And you probably know how to speak to people in a way that
I think they're
more
probably,
convincing.
They're probably related. But again, when you add the public speaking aspect of it, I have to get up at a conference and my colleagues are in front of me, or I get up at church, or anywhere, And one of the things in the book are the five speeches that executives will encounter in their career, right?
Yeah.
That if they're ready for and have an understanding about, we'll more likely say yes to them.
Right, yeah.
And,
makes sense.
And know what to do.
Yeah.
And for example, one of the examples is introductions. We've talked a lot about this, that how to introduce somebody effectively. I've seen it completely destroyed, just terrible. Terrible. Right, right. I heard an introduction the other day that was read by the person giving the introduction. Two pages.
Oh, wow. It's a book.
It's awful.
Yeah.
It was absolutely awful. Did the exact an introduction.
Talked about their kindergarten teacher's name.
What music. What
summer camps.
What instrument they played in a band in high school. I said, and what an introduction is supposed to do is uplift the audience with the speaker.
Yeah.
Okay. And it did the opposite.
Yeah.
And the person read it.
Oh, cold.
I watched them turn to, I was close enough, I could see them turn the page. And so key practice, pro tip, if you're giving a presentation and going to speak somewhere, vital that you write your own introduction.
Yes.
And give it to the person. I like to meet with them and say, do you understand what I'm asking you to do?
Right.
Read this. I've done it hundreds and hundreds of times. They say thank you.
Yes, yeah. I had a one bad introduction, and it wasn't really the woman's fault. The mic went off.
Oh,
so we were on different mics, obviously. It wasn't a podium or a lectern situation. So she was kind of on the side of the stage with the handheld, and her mic was off.
Yeah.
And so the music was playing because I have music introduction. No one could hear her.
Yeah.
And it was such an anticlimactic introduction.
It's, I like to say when you're speaking, you have to control the controllables.
That's right, yeah.
If you can, those, because there's all that's uncontrollable.
Yes, like that.
So you would have to, in that case, I don't know what you did. I don't want to put you on the spot, but you'd have to fix that problem, maybe by reintroducing, I'm sure you have.
A little bit of a highlight of who I am because, you know, first, I just thanked her, and then I acknowledged the problem.
Yeah, right, right.
This is live, and you know,
good for you.
This is what we do. But I'm Jeremy Toriskin.
In speaking, Murphy was an optimist, right? Everything's going to go wrong, and you have to deal with it. My daughter is running for office.
Wow, that must be something.
It's very cool. It's a town board where she lives, and we had a fundraiser. She had a fundraiser. I say we. She had a fundraiser. I'm her side coach, you know?
Yeah.
And we videoed her first presentation. She did marvelously at it. But they have these things with the tables behind, and you speak and people sit at the table.
Yeah, most like the head, what do they used to call that?
Head tables. Disaster.
So
now someone's speaking with people behind them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, cardinal rule number two.
You
have to focus on you.
Do not. Control your controllables.
Yeah,
what you can. We're talking about it. We're going over the video with my daughter, and of course, what could she have done?
Yeah.
Step to the side in the corner, make sure there's nothing behind her.
Yes.
So that,
yes.
Right?
Would have been,
and so for the future.
Yeah. These are the things, and the only way you can get these things is by A, doing them.
Or making a mistake at them.
And B, recording them.
That's correct.
Like the golfers who watch their backswings.
Oh, I have if somebody is speaking these days, anybody, pros for sure, but executives who speak as part of their work, they have to get videoed.
Yeah, yeah.
Because what's missing is feedback.
Right.
And if they don't have that visual feedback, you will never see what you're doing because much of it is unconscious. I did a thing with my daughter. She had very quick. She gave a 2-minute speech, and I showed her how her hand gestures was perfect. Perfect.
Mm, that's nice.
Smooth and complimentary towards what she was saying. And then she clasped her hands together and then she opened them and made a. And it was so natural because she was so relaxed.
Right.
She was so calm. She's done this many times. She's my daughter.
She's been around the
speaking her whole life.
Growing up her whole life. Yeah.
Yeah. And so she just did it, but we could see it on video. And I showed it to her and I said, look at how natural you look. There are other speakers that we videoed, not so much.
Right.
Gestures all over the place, freezing the hands in the pocket.
Right.
And so when you see yourself on video, this is a great example of it right now. When you see it, you can make changes.
Right. Yeah. And I know a lot of things too, like the little things that you won't get until you see the video, like the way you ask the audience a question and then pretty much either answer it without giving them a time to think on it, or maybe you make them uncomfortable by even asking some members of the audience. So instead of asking questions, change that to like many of you,
yes,
I've experienced blah, blah, blah. So you're still connecting and you still can answer a question, but in a different way.
Lots of ways to
but
do it.
These are the little things that you never get to think of until somebody else sees it.
Yes.
And as somebody professional like you has been doing it for a long time.
Well, when you, and you know, we're doing this for real live people. When you get somebody on video and you coach them watching the video, I mean, I literally go to my golf instructor, 30-minute golf lesson, within 2 minutes, I'm looking at myself on video compared to pro golfers. He's got the software, and it's instant feedback.
Yeah.
And then practice the new thing.
That's right. That's the key.
That absence of feedback about speaking, we're talking about now, not hitting golf balls, but speaking, when somebody gets that feedback, it's priceless.
Yeah, I think that's it.
That is a lightning bolt.
It is when you consume it with the right mindset. You know,
consume the feedback.
Yeah.
You bet.
Because a lot of people get defensive or they're just not paying attention because they're, I don't know, it's just the human nature or ego or something, but.
Well, there's a lot going on there. Yeah. And if somebody is defensive about it, they're it's probably affecting their speaking as well.
Yeah.
So with the equipment that you have here, we are able to, all somebody has to do is pop their phone up in a meeting that they're speaking at, and we capture footage.
That's right.
It used to be a lot harder. We can almost instantly look at a video of you speaking or I speaking and talk about it and actually see it. It's a priceless tool.
Yeah, and then you can coach anyone around the world with this now because of Zoom and on your website, and you can go there and show them some things. And your website is?
Bob@bobfreyer.com,
www. That's the email. All right, bobfreyer.com. Yeah. And there's a clip section where they can see different proportions of this kind of things we're talking about here. Yeah,
yes, indeed.
Yeah, and then they can contact you and they work with you. And like you said, just have an iPhone, have somebody in the audience, or even if you're sitting close enough, set it up, hit record, and then go up on. Or in front of the boardroom.
You bet.
Right?
These things. You can do it it's so easy to do it in an actual live audience.
Yeah.
You pop up your phone and boom. Yeah. You really only need 3 or 4 minutes to tell what's happening.
Yeah. And those are the little tricks that will give them the slight edge advantage and to make them remember. The thing is this, what people get wrong about speakers, in my opinion, especially when you're talking to the event planners about hiring you, it's not about what you talk about. It's not about how many times you've done it. It's about what are the takeaways? Are they implementable immediately? And is it going to be memorable and effective? If you get those three things across to the event planner, you're going to get hired.
Well, you have a memorable, valuable.
If you get those things across to your client, same thing.
Yeah.
In our case, the client is the event planner. But if your client I went against MasTec and Fiberdyne, some billion-dollar companies with tens of thousands of employees, and we had 27, and I won an $80 million contract because it just so happened we left them with actionable what we were going to do that was different, and it was memorable because they hired us.
Was that a speaking?
No, that was a big, huge fiber optic construction project that we had no business being in the room.
I got you. That's a valuable presentation of practice, isn't it?
It was huge.
Right?
I mean, it made the next 3 years of the company because it turned into $160 million.
For you.
Yeah.
Imagine sales companies. We got them all over the place. I've spent years and years in them over the years, and they all have to give these presentations just like you're talking about, and the ability to present well. Practice and rehearse, Jeremy.
Right.
Practice and rehearse. Video it.
Yes.
Coach it. When you're talking about these very, very high, expensive price tickets, you should do that prep.
Right. Yeah. And then the other thing that people get wrong, and I don't know if you work with teams, is they go in with a team and everybody talks over everybody else on your own team, or they repeat stuff, or they're answering out of their lane. So, do you work with teams to teach them how to Yeah, this is yours. Here's what you're going to speak to these items. That's right. I had this one guy.
You're talking about story. Team selling, right?
Team selling. So
and
we
team presenting.
We were in a boardroom setting, and this guy had a habit. It was a bad habit of taking something somebody else said earlier that wasn't his lane.
Yeah.
And repeating it in a slightly different way so he'd get credit for it later.
Yeah, that's not going to go well.
It was horrible. It was uncomfortable. It was obvious.
And everybody knew it, right?
And it happened over and over again, and he never really did get that under control, I don't think. But I stopped inviting him to these meetings.
Yeah. Yeah, if you don't prepare for these meetings, you may not deserve to win them.
No, right. Ray used to call that murder board meetings, where you just sit there and murder your content, murder everything about it. And that's something that's priceless because you get to work with a sales team to go in there.
Ahead of time,
right.
I have a client that told me they did a very large accounting practice presentation. Big.
So trying not to make it boring, make it memorable?
Well, we were critiquing it later. This is the CEO, and she said, Bob, this is where she talks. She says, Bob, one of our employees went rogue in the meeting. She goes, you gotta help me stop that. I said, I can stop that. Don't worry.
Oh, wow.
And it just...
How did you stop it?
Well, we rehearsed it.
Okay,
and,
so...
what
rogue?
We got real clear on who does what. Let's put it that
way.
That's
okay? Funny. That's pretty funny. Yeah. And we've all been in those situations. Just it's uncomfortable and the chances... And if you... Sometimes when you're not prepared like that and people are doing that, they think this is the way the organization's run.
Disastrous.
Yeah, and then good luck to you. So when do you think the book, where are we at with the process?
Because
this is pretty exciting.
The book is, I've got about 7,000 words written.
Was this book number one for you?
Where? No, this is my third book.
Third book. Third book. So you know,
I know the process.
The process now. Yeah.
And I have a brother who is an English teacher. Retired English teacher, never saw a sentence he didn't want to fix, right? That's my joke with him. And so he's done a light edit of all my work.
Right.
And the book will be done this fall. And I'm excited about it. It's my last book. And
famous last words.
Yeah. It came from me personally. I did. Yeah. What do I want to do in the last part of my career?
Yes.
And the most fun I've ever had, and the most impactful work I've ever done, is helping people speak better.
Right.
Helping
right.
executives do better in front of an audience.
A lot of our audience, mixed between you and I, who are going to be watching, this, are professional speakers because you've done it so long.
Yes.
And I've gotten in my short career to know some very respectable and for me mentors, and so I think that our reach, though we want to talk to a lot of executives in the business world, a lot of speakers and people having aspirations to speak will be watching this. So I'd like to really get into like really what we were talking about, going a little deeper on some of these things.
Yeah.
For example, what the number one probably in most. I think it'd be a pretty safe bet to be the most impactful to spreading a message is what?
Well, beyond the panic that we talked about, right? You want to keep, if you get your panic under control and then you prepare correctly, what pro speakers talk about, our friends, and I would tell you, Jerry, some of my best friends are speakers in the whole world, right? Many of them are the best people you can find. There are many, many people that want to be speakers, that see other speakers and say that I want to do that. It's very difficult to make a living at it. And I think it does require that 10,000 hours that we talk about to becoming an expert. And if you were to listen to pros talk at the various meetings that you put on and that we have attended many, many times, you will hear people talking about telling stories.
Yeah.
And I like to take it a little bit further, right? And Mark Twain, if you think about in our past history, Mark Twain was the first professional storyteller, that he would weave stories and be very, very entertaining. Others took that, Bill Gove being one of my mentors, took it and put it into keynote speaking.
Right.
And professional speakers would use the term, you hear this a lot, signature story.
Okay.
Right? Yep. Where they have a story that they tell. And you know the joke, the speaker got run over by a bus. It was laying under the bus, and the paramedic crawls under the bus and gets the speaker and says, are you all right? And she says, no, but I got a great story.
Right.
Right. And so it's Bill used to say, show them behind the curtain, give them a peek. And so the stories that we talk about, signature stories, or in a broader sense, examples and illustrations,
right?
Used to engage the audience. So the secret sauce about speaking is to connect with the audience in a way that engages them. And very often, personal stories, examples and illustrations often engage the audience's attention.
Right.
So you don't know what's coming next.
Yeah.
Right? You and I have talked about this at some length, right? And it's the difference. It's in the book, I call it, for executives who speak and do their work, their everyday work, they don't think about this all day long. But what's that next level for them? How do they ensure engagement? Add to the fact that everybody's on their phones.
Right.
Everybody is waiting for you to be boring, and I got to get on my phone.
It's right there. Your competition is sitting.
It's incredible.
Six inches from.
The attention, the hold of attention is more difficult now than it's ever been. And will continue to be. I have a company that I know that the CEO banned phones for meetings.
Mm.
Leave your phone, and when we're together, be together, right? And so the signature story idea is about somebody, a speaker, using an example. Earlier in our hour, I talked about my daughter running for office, right? That's a story.
Right.
It's my story.
It's yours,
Nobody else has it.
That's right.
I was with her.
But it's relatable. It's to the point that we're speaking. I think a lot of people make mistakes there.
Exactly right. So Bill said, Bill Gove again, tell a story, make a point. Tell a story, make a point.
Yeah.
Right? So the idea that the story or illustration or example is used to reinforce what you're trying to say. Most of the time, you're not the star of that story.
Yes, that's right. And that's hard to get that point across, because we all have these stories and you think, yes, it's going to impact and tie into it, but there is a cutoff. And those are the words that we use, the small little inflections and the small little words from the I to the, even like the imagine, just if you can imagine, or Chris, what's his last name? Voss has a great example where he's talking about I was invited to the FBI. I was interviewed. I was taken to all these rooms, and then he told the same story, but instead he used you.
Yeah.
So imagine you were invited to the FBI. Imagine you went through all this, and you went to the, and it puts the whole perspective on its head, and it's going to be memorable.
That's a great example, because now you're talking about using that story to make your point, rather than using it to make me the speaker.
Or edify myself, right.
That's, exactly. You missed the whole thing.
Exactly.
And we see amateurs thinking about aspiring to be speakers, and if they don't get that, they're never going to be paid.
So do you think that your sales experience in negotiations help figuring out how to work that into somebody's speech? So if you're trying to work with somebody and they have what we call an eye infection, or they're an opera singer, right?
Yeah.
Me.
Yeah.
That you could take your sales and negotiations experience and weave that in to turn those things around. Has that been helpful for you?
Well, the other thing that comes up about this is if you talk about selling or being persuasive or trying to be influential, mm-hmm. which we all
are
trying to be in all kinds of ways, that stories and illustrations are evidence of what you're saying. Right? So if you tell a story about or an example about something that happened that supports the point you're trying to make, it is evidence. My daughter giving a speech is part of the campaign that she's on.
Yeah.
And her ability to weave her family into the speech was so nicely done.
Yeah.
Right? I'm telling a story about a point I'm trying to make about speaking, right?
Right.
And it is evidence.
Right. Yeah.
It supports what you're trying to say.
And
it's also engaging and holds people's attention.
And we have something called, Kevin Snyder's who taught me this, called the heartbeat of a speech. And so sit back and look at your speech and ask yourself, you know, every 5 minutes or so, what is the audience doing right now? Mm-hmm. Are they sitting? Are they just listening?
Yeah.
Listening. And you go, wow, I have a 60-minute speech here. And all the audience is doing is listening. There's no interaction. There's no reflection. There's no laughing. There's no entertainment. There's no punchline. These are some things you could do, right?
Pretty soon there's going to be no audience.
No audience, right? And they're not going to stick around 60, let alone 15 minutes with that.
Again, I lived and worked at a time when people didn't have their phones in their hands.
Yeah.
Okay? And so they are waiting for you to slow down and bore me because I got to go do something else on my phone.
Yeah.
And when I was younger, was asked to give eulogies. And I know you kill it at funerals.
I kill at funerals.
Right? And I set that up for you.
I know I've read that.
But there were two times in my life that I remember very clearly that I was asked at a funeral, does anybody want to say anything about the dear departed?
Right.
And I was not ready. And I didn't.
And you regret it.
I regretted it a lot. And I made a point to be ready.
Yeah, I think the reason I can say that joke, I kill at funerals, is because I think anytime I've spoken at funerals, I do make it personal, but I make it funny because most of the people that I know close enough that I'm at their funeral and they're asking me to speak want me to poke fun at them. You know, because that's the life that I live now. You know?
Well, and I there's a line in my book that I quoted you in my book in this regard, and I said,
nice.
Interesting enough, in that environment, the audience wants to laugh.
They do. Right? Oh, I've gotten so much feedback.
Yeah. But the point is, the point we're talking about is the speaker saying, yes, I can handle that.
Right. And it takes a lot of brass tact to get up there and do that. But I was comfortable. I've never been more comfortable than on the eulogy stand for some reason. I've been on a lot of different stages. And speaking at somebody at that point of their life's over, but it's about how we mourn. And because I, at the end of the day, for me, it's just about helping as many people as I can.
Yeah.
And
so we could talk a lot about the other thing that executives have to give us, speeches of acceptance.
Oh, I have a hard time with that.
A week ago.
That would be tough.
The British Open took place in England, and the American one, his name was Brian Harman, and pouring rain. They give the ceremony, and it is customary that the golfer of the year, this guy changed his life by winning this. Mm. He's 5'7". They made a big thing of it. He's introduced in the pouring rain, given the jug. The guy who introduced him was 6'5". Brian, the golfer, walks up with the jug holding, reaches up with one hand, pulls the microphone down to his mouth, and went hands-free. It was perfect. His speech was a speech of acceptance. Mm. Thank you. He thanked his wife and children.
Yeah.
He thanked the fans. He thanked the RNA who put the meat. The golf tournament. Let's get out of the rain, folks. Perfect.
Yeah, right. He read the room.
Perfect.
Yeah, let's get out. And that's the thing. Reading the room.
Yes.
The energy.
Yes.
Right. Maybe someone behind you had one of the most emotional stories ever. Right. Got his hand stuck under a rock and had to cut it off and took him 8 days to do it. And you're like, how do you compete with that? You know, and that emotion, right? The roller coaster. Yeah. Then you come out, and now your time is to talk about numbers.
You better take the room.
You better have some trick. Yeah. Well, and these are kind of things that you work with people on. They say, listen, there's a trick for everything. And over 30 years, you've seen it all.
I've seen it. I've seen a few things.
Yeah. And working with, I think, teams and people, especially on the larger corporation stage, is, I think, where you really shine. If you have an opportunity to talk in front of 500 employees at once and you can touch their hearts and heads, right, minds and hearts at once, and you do a good job, the loyalty that you build in their minds is priceless. To make up that sort of time and touch them all at once and have them now all kind of championing you and the company.
You bet.
And that's where you can really mess things up. You can really alienate people too.
Or you can fall in a pothole.
Yeah.
If you're not ready for that.
Yeah.
And you can also.
But I've seen it done so well by some people.
It's worth 1,000 Facebook posts if you do that well.
Yeah. And it's key to the business.
I was in a meeting where they were honoring somebody in a hospital. I was a guest, about 150 people in an auditorium. And at the end of it, it was a lot happened during the meeting. It was very, very well done. Two lecterns set up on podiums with screens behind them in this auditorium. And they were honoring the woman that developed the breast cancer unit in this hospital. And at the end, they said, we'd like the CEO to say a few words. And he came up and, Jeremy, I'm telling you, in 12 minutes, he did such a good job.
Right.
He said to the audience, I got four things I want to tell you. Three and then the one that's the most important to me.
He set that up
the
nicely.
The room went silent still.
Yeah.
Who was in the room were community leaders of the and survivors.
Oh, right.
Families.
A charged, emotionally charged
incredible
room.
And this guy nailed it in 12 minutes. In 12 minutes. And I said, I stood up. They gave him a standing ovation.
Right.
I was giving an ovation for the speech because it was so good. But he did so much. 12 minutes, I timed.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And I've talked to him since. I know him. And I've said to him, you've got some natural ability in front of audiences. He panned it down, but he was a very talented guy. Unusual skill.
Why are you such a big fan of PI?
Well, PI, it works. People love the product, and that's really good for any kind of selling, that the product is so good. But the idea, the issue of talent management and understanding where people fit and the cost of turnover, you're seeing turnover in corporate America these days that is unprecedented.
Off the charts,
and you can't even count how much it costs. Mm. It's uncalculable.
Yeah.
And so using assessments, there are lots of them. You mentioned DISC and others, and there's lots of using assessments for a number of things. We're talking about using an assessment for speakers, right? And do an assessment of their skills. Taking a moment to do that, if you're going to hire somebody and that job is an important, imagine, I have a client that just hired a CFO into a highly complex job. They better pick the right person.
Right.
And so we're off topic a bit here, but it's helping to solve some of these problems.
It's come back to the importance of having all of these parts of your business right, and speaking is a very important part of that.
Absolutely.
And so it's an indicator if you're going through the trouble of doing these assessments and trying to keep the people, then getting work for them is important.
Yes.
And then relating to them is important. And that's where presentation skills come in.
Connecting with them. Yeah.
You don't just, even though you're presenting to a board or you're presenting to an audience, every time you walk out of your office door, you're on.
Yeah.
At a CEO level, people are looking and listening.
Watching you.
And
how do you act?
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because they're going to emit that.
Jim Cathcart, who is a mutual friend of ours, just finished his book on speaking. And one of the things he talks about in there is, as a speaker, when you show up at a meeting, imagine a company's having a meeting, we go in, we don't know anybody, we're on the outside. I like to go in early, right?
Oh,
And so he makes a point in his book, which is some really good points. He's that as soon as you show up on site, everybody's watching.
Yes, everyone's watching the speakers.
And be aware of it, be mindful that what you do affects how they might see you when you do and all of that. And Jim is a very classy guy and a good model.
I met him in a tuxedo. So when you say
who is in a tuxedo? You or him?
Jim was in a tuxedo.
He was in a tuxedo.
So when I think of Jim, I think that classy is right because I picture him in a tuxedo.
You know what? Maybe we can get him on here.
I think we have a good shot.
Love to talk to Jim. Jim has done some really great things in the speaking world, and if he wears tuxedo, maybe he'll come.
Well, we got the black motif, right? White and black here, so
that's
we can definitely he would fit right in if he's in South Florida, or you can come on Zoom.
Love to get him.
Fine. Yeah, we'd love. I think we could do a tag team interview that.
Be great.
That one. Yeah. So this Jim Cathcart
coming for you.
We're going to get this clip here pretty soon. What do you think if I'm in the market of maybe I want to get to a place, middle management, I aspire to be a manager. Is that now a good time to buy this book? Can they apply it to how they deal with going upwards, like punching up.
Yeah, I certainly, if you look at the hierarchy of jobs and where I'm a supervisor and I got a chance to be a VP mm-hmm. or something like that, or and there's a probably good chance that VP job is more visible.
Right.
And speaking becomes, and running meetings and reporting, all of those things. I have a nephew that just became chairman of the board of a Ronald McDonald House.
Wow.
And it happened because his baby was born at 2 pounds on Christmas Day 3 years ago. And he went through, the baby's fine. Young Benny is fantastic today. But they went through the early birth issues, and they were housed during this time for 8 weeks at a Ronald McDonald House.
Right.
He then went on the board. Now he's next year, he's chairman.
Right.
Right? Because he's a good speaker.
Well, I think one of the things that can get the C-suite's attention, because everything rolls uphill and rolls downhill. So when these big board meetings happen and the C-suite has to go and speak to the board, well, they've spoken to their underlings.
Yes,
a number of meetings.
Yes.
So when you stand up in one of those meetings and your presentation is on point and your message is great and clear and your presentation and your
and
skills
and body language and everything else that needs to be,
you're going to start. People will. They're going to remember you.
People will know it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And when those positions come open, they're going to go after you.
And to that end, I've often said to people, if you're in a meeting and somebody says there are any questions, go ahead and ask one.
Yeah.
You'd be the one to ask the question.
Yeah.
Right?
Intelligent question.
Well, but you get that exposure.
Yes.
Being positive exposure.
Yes.
Have something prepared.
Yeah. It's the smallest things that are triggering.
Looking to get triggered.
It's such a fine line that you're walking. You actually told me one time that my bias was not only glaring,
you said something that it's going to get,
and it was a family story, but it was in a mixed audience that I didn't take that in consideration. And actually it wasn't, I was selling anything, but you can alienate people who can help you in the future unknowingly.
Correct.
And that was the point, I think, got from that was.
Now, if you knowingly want to alienate, that's another story. But if you say something that causes somebody to have a reaction to you that's not positive, and you don't want that.
Right.
That's the trouble. And you're right. One word can set it off.
One word can. So all the more reason to really know your subject.
And so what we're talking about asking a question, if you ask a question and remove your own bias from it and make it a question that others can benefit from,
pretty safe
and also valuable, because you're speaking up and doing something for others.
Yeah, absolutely. What else? What do we want to cover before we wrap this thing up?
Well, I just would encourage people to get coaching. I mean, you and I have talked about this a lot. There are plenty of coaches to coin a new product that exists. Plenty of coaches.
Yes.
Where people can come and find coaches for lots of different subjects.
That's right.
Right? And engage them in some way that works for them. The speaking is really a part of that.
Yes.
Where I'm making it my special thing because I've spent 10,000 hours on this topic.
That's right.
And so people need to get coached.
Yes, I like that.
And what you said earlier with the technology that we have, a 2-minute video clip. I got my daughter two minutes and 17 second clip, right? And so we're able to, on Zoom, go over the speech bar by bar.
Yes.
And so we're able to do that now from a technological standpoint, standpoint. And so I would challenge people to get coached.
And I had firsthand kind of experience with that 1-minute speech where
it was fantastic.
I laid them down and we just kept repeating it and swapping phone calls. And
And we looked at a video, didn't we?
We looked at a couple times.
You gave me some video samples that we reacted to. We did that so fast.
Yeah,
of course, you only had one day.
Well, I did.
You didn't give me a lot of time. And using video.
Well, you know what the thing is I had this story that I've been working on for 2 years now. And when the opportunity came up where I found out that day that this competition was happening, I was able to join.
You were ready to go.
Because Let's do it.
You needed a little fine tuning.
Yeah, definitely.
And nobody speaks for a minute, right? So to get that done was very difficult.
It was a challenge, but I think we both had a lot of fun with that exercise. And I'm still in it, actually. I still have another wild card interview coming up next week.
You get 2 minutes next time?
2 minutes.
2 minutes.
Two whole minutes.
On Zoom.
Yeah.
So that's a different, right? You can.
It's different. Absolutely different.
You can add all kinds of color in 2 minutes.
That's right. And a different with the video. It's because it's on Zoom. Yeah, so it's going to be different.
Right.
So, yeah, lots of good stuff coming up.
So rehearse.
Absolutely. Rehearse. I've seen you in action, and I know you're the real deal.
Thank you.
And so anything you need here, you know, you've got my support.
Thank you, Jeremy.
Thank you for coming in today.
My pleasure.
All right. Bob at bobfrere.com. Reach out to Bob. Bobfrere.com, the website. Look at his clips. And we appreciate you joining us today here at the Slight Edge Advantage. Catch you next time.